Hello, and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here's a look at some of the stories that were in the news this week.
Allies and Russia continue to have clear disagreements on the crisis in and around Ukraine, and the security situation remains of deep concern.
Corruption by politicians or public officials is not just an envelope filled with money. These people make decisions that affect our lives. We know corruption is a problem around the world, but how bad is it, and what can be done?
In the ongoing fight against corruption, where is the fight succeeding and where is it failing?
In general, I would say that after 20 years of existence of Transparency International, the situation is not much better.
Yet another ceasefire is due to go into effect in eastern Ukraine. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko ordered the government troops to cease fighting starting from midnight April 1st, 2 weeks before Easter, which is a public holiday in the mainly Orthodox Ukraine. Russian forces also voiced readiness to adhere to the ceasefire agreed in Belarusian capital Minsk on Wednesday.
Це не просто державні справи. Це питання безпеки нашої дипустанови. Це питання безпеки наших співвітчизників. Це сталося на землі, де поляки жили століттями. І досі живуть деякі польські сім'ї.
Це атака направлена на українсько-польську співпрацю, яка в останніх кілька місяців розвивається дуже інтенсивно і дуже добре.
On the 23rd of March, Ukraine's parliament approved amendments to the law on the prevention of corruption that require anti-corruption NGOs and investigative journalists to file a public declaration of assets. There would be criminal penalties for failure to comply. A few days later, the president signed and approved the amendments. This move was criticized by many Western countries, as well as by civic activists in Ukraine, as constraining civil society and putting pressure on anti-corruption NGOs. A year ago, Parliament had passed a regulation requiring Ukrainian legislators to declare their assets. Many deputies had complied and made e-declarations when the process started in October 2016. It had been part of a package of laws required in order to obtain visa-free EU travel. In other developments, the Prime Minister, Volodymyr Groysman, called on the whole of the anti-corruption agency to resign due to technical problems arising on their website. The website is where government officials have to declare their assets before 31st of March. The Prime Minister pointed out that due to the technical problems, some officials may miss the deadline. Meanwhile, the National Anti-Corruption Bureau, NABU, has been carrying out new investigations and searches, and its targets during the last week included the National Bank of Ukraine. For its part, the prosecutor's office has searched the Anti-Monopoly Commission as part of its investigation of the giant tobacco monopolist company, Tedis, owned by a Russian oligarch, suspected of, among other things, secretly funding Russian-backed separatists. More on these developments in the battle against corruption later, as they are the main topic this week. Meanwhile, Poland temporarily closed its consulates in Ukraine this week. The Polish consulate in Lutsk was fired on, late on the 28th of March. Judging by the damage close to the roof at the top of the building, a grenade launcher could have been used, according to media present at the site. The Polish foreign minister said it would close all consulates in Ukraine until Ukraine provided effective 24-hour guards. President Poroshenko and Foreign Minister Klimkin condemned the attack. The Speaker of the Ukrainian Parliament stated that the enemy, through petty provocation, is trying to destroy the international anti-Putin coalition. This incident in Lutsk follows five other incidents since the beginning of the year at various locations in Ukraine where gravestones of particular significance to the Polish community were defaced with offensive graffiti and damaged. The co-chair of Polish-Ukrainian parliamentary relations, Mykola Kniazhicki, commented that there were a number of indications that the incidents were not instigated by Ukrainian extremists but by outside agents. Also this week, a group of 50 people attempted to block the international highway between Lviv in western Ukraine and Poland. They held slogans in Polish that incited Polish-Ukrainian conflict, but the security service, SBU, managed to intercede and prevented an incident. After questioning those involved, the SBU maintains that the group were individuals from various regions who did not necessarily have a connection to the Polish community, but who were hired for a payment of 50 to 200 hryvnia. And the first NATO-Russia Council session of the year took place this week in Brussels, and the topic of Ukraine dominated the session. NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg commented that the session was frank and constructive, although the two sides continued to be in disagreement. Secretary General Stoltenberg said the alliance urged Russia to influence the separatists in eastern Ukraine to make them meet their obligations according to the Minsk process. And Russia's ambassador criticized NATO for continuing to provide political and practical support to Kyiv. In Minsk, the trilateral negotiation group reached yet another agreement on the 29th of March to implement a ceasefire. It should take effect from the 1st of April. President Poroshenko ordered the military to implement the ceasefire and a weapons pullback. He commented that he was not very optimistic that the Russian-supported separatists in the two eastern regions will abide by the agreement. Observers on the front line are reporting heavy shelling in expectation of the coming ceasefire. And the war in eastern Ukraine has really slipped from the international headlines, despite the fact that the fighting, destruction and killing continue. Over the past week, 9 Ukrainian soldiers were killed and 28 were injured. Heavy bombardment continues in Svitlodarsk, Pavlopil, Shrokino, Mariupol and Avdiivka, where a residential neighborhood was bombed on Tuesday. A military helicopter, an Mi-2, crashed on the 26th of March near Kramatorsk. Although not directly casualties of the front line, 5 officers of the Ukrainian armed forces were killed as a result of the helicopter colliding with a power line. On the 31st of March, a colonel in Ukraine's counterintelligence, Oleksandr Kharaberyush, was killed by a car bomb in the eastern frontline city of Mariupol. Ukraine's military announced that they have extinguished fires in Balaklia. Ukraine calling listeners will remember we reported that this was the site of a major explosion and a fire in a munitions depot. 70% of munitions there were destroyed, 20,000 civilians had to be evacuated, and the demining operation is still continuing. My guest this week is Andriy Slusar, who is a senior specialist at Transparency International Ukraine, an organization which is in the forefront of combating and exposing corruption and campaigning for greater transparency, not just in Ukraine, but globally. He'll tell us a little bit more about Transparency International. But let me begin by saying that in this last week, since we had a very nice discussion with Yulia Marushevska last week about aspects of the battle against corruption in this country. We've seen even more developments, even more dramatic developments during this last week. We've seen not only searches of the National Bank by NABU, we've seen seemingly anti-corruption organizations, NGOs, civil society organizations being targeted in parliament by being forced eventually to make e-declarations about their income and sources of revenue, etc. And, of course, this topic remains one for censure from the international community as it expresses concern about what's going on. So, Andriy, welcome to Ukraine Calling. Maybe just 2 words about yourself. What do you actually do for Transparency International? And remind our listeners what Transparency International's mandate or mission is.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. Well, Transparency International is a global anti-corruption network of civil society representatives, civil society activists, and it has its chapters almost in all countries.
Where is the headquarters?
The headquarters is in Berlin, Germany. The head of the board is José Ugas from Peru, the former prosecutor, who is well known for prosecuting a lot of corruption offenses, including former president of Peru. And he lives in Peru, in Lima, and frequently he's coming to Berlin. He was visiting Kyiv last year.
How long has Transparency International been in Ukraine?
Our organization became an official chapter starting from 2012. And before that, we were cooperating with Transparency International Global Movement without having this official status, I would say so.
So you were here during the Yanukovych period?
That's also... at that time, I wasn't a part of the TI team, but the organization was active.
And what do you do personally? What are you responsible for?
In TI, I'm managing the project of fighting top corruption in terms of criminal proceedings. So the main objective of our project is to monitor and try to push forward the investigation against Yanukovych and his allies, so corruption crimes committed during his regime.
Has it become easier, it would seem, after the revolution of dignity to expose and fight corruption? Or have you run into similar or maybe more disguised, more subtle barriers?
Well, it become easier, but not so easy as it was expected during the revolution or just after the revolution, because the far... it goes from the time of revolution itself, the harder it becomes to communicate with the law enforcement, with state agencies. They are not so willing to share the information, to start the investigation and to send the indictments to the court if it comes to the criminal investigations.
But is this because the personnel hasn't been changed, essentially, the culture of the way of doing things? Or is it also linked to lack of political will higher up?
Well, I would say that the main reasons is the lack of political will itself and the top personnel, which is not ready or not willing to change the culture, the hierarchical culture. So the regular employees, the regular personnel, they would act according to the main culture, to the main baseline of the agency, whatever it is. And the changing of it culture and the changing of this mindset is up to the top personnel, up to heads of these agencies.
And it also involves the average individual in the street, because many of them criticize parliamentarians, the president, and yet in their everyday life partake or support forms of corruption.
Absolutely. And this perception in the society that all the state authorities are corrupted or are not willing to fight corruption, it frustrates regular personnel. So
demoralizes them.
Yeah, so they more likely to remain the part of the system because the society don't see them as the effective state servants. So they're trying to hold to the system which is protecting them, basically.
And of course, there's the issue of decent pay as a preemptive factor. I guess for many civil servants, the temptation to take a little bit on the side to supplement their meager earnings is understandable.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the very significant issues about the number of salaries for state servant, and is very discussable for last few years, that to make it more efficient, we need to pay comparative salaries with the market, or at least close to that numbers.
Briefly, just give us an idea of the kind of forces from civil society that are involved. Apart from Transparency International, there seem to be quite a lot of small and larger NGOs, representatives of civil society, taking on this issue in recent years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, after the Revolution of Dignity, the civil society capacity was growing pretty stable, I would say, because now we have the coalition of NGOs, which is called the Reanimation Package of Reforms, which includes more than 60 NGOs in different spheres, starting from ecological issues and reforms in medicine. And
are you part of this as an international NGO, or are you separate?
Transparency International Ukraine is a part of this coalition, and our experts are taking part in working groups of these coalitions on different issues, especially in anti-corruption and in law enforcement reforms. So that is the main think tank of the NGOs, which contains almost all significant players on this field.
Okay, let's quickly look at where we stand in terms of advances in the struggle against corruption, or attempts to curb corruption, shall we say. We see certainly signs of progress. I mean, let's take the legal system, the reform of that, trying to get rid of corruption among judges, for instance. We have this flawed, so far, e-declaration system, about which I'd like you to comment a little bit later. We have these raids and arrests from time to time of fairly senior officials, in the Nazirov case is probably the best known. Where do we stand in terms of the progress that's been made? Have we turned a corner yet, or are we still at a fairly early stage?
Well, we have definitely have some progress if comparing with 2013, for instance. And also, adding to the list you mentioned, we have the electronic procurement system, which is very, I think, the most well-known abroad among other anti-corruption reforms, because in the procurement sphere there were significant numbers of looters of the state funds. And now it's developing in different spheres. So the same system now is developed for the sales of state entities, or for any goods that should be sold by state. Also, a few brand new agencies were established, like National Anti-Corruption Bureau, which is supposed to investigate the cases of top corruption in terms of committed of top level officials, or in terms of the amount of money involved in the crime.
Andriy, it's Nabu is very much in the news, on the cutting edge, in the forefront, the battering ram, if you want, against corruption. But is it sufficiently capacitated? Are there enough people? Are its powers and prerogatives sufficient?
Well, actually, Nabu is in the process of establishing the whole system, because currently they have only their head office here in Kyiv, and they're supposed to have five more regional offices, which are now establishing. A few of them already have their heads. A few of them even don't have heads, not even about the personnel. But as the main cases are the top corruption, which is committed in the capital, so the capacity of the head office for now, I would say it's more or less enough for dealing with that amount of work and that amount of cases they need to investigate.
How much more time will they need to be set up in the regions?
Well, it depends. Actually, it depends on the view of the top personnel of NABU, because I've heard that they might have the idea to focus on the headquarters and have the regional offices not so big, just to help and to assist with the work of the investigators, with the detectives on the head office. If in that case, it wouldn't require a lot of time. I would say, like, by the end of this year, they should completely form the system of NABU.
And remind our listeners which other agencies or bodies are involved in the struggle against corruption.
Also, we have the Special Anti-Corruption Prosecutor's Office, which is supposed to prosecute and present in the court cases investigated by NABU. This office is a part of the system of the General Prosecutor's Office, and the head of this Special Anti-Corruption Prosecutor's Office is the deputy of the General Prosecutor. But still, it has much more independence than the regular departments of the GPO. So it's not the totally independent body, but it's pretty independent part of the system of General Prosecutor's Office.
And what was the conflict about last year when we saw these ugly scenes on the streets of Kyiv, where workers of the procuracy were struggling physically with members of NABU?
Yeah.
Was this simply about turf warfare, trying to protect their spheres of influence or prerogatives or what?
Well, actually, the issue was that the NABU detective started investigations against prosecutors from the General Prosecutor's Office. And the General Prosecutor Office, they decided to fight back, literally. So they were trying to arrest the detectives that were following their employees, and the special forces of both agencies were involved in that clash. So it was very widely discussed in the...
But has this friction continued, or were these teething problems of new institutions, of new bodies that have been resolved?
Well, I think that the conflict wasn't resolved totally, but it definitely was milded, and the heads of these agencies, the General Prosecutor and the head of NABU, they had a few public discussions, and they showed some level of agreement. So after that time, we didn't see such significant clashes between them, but definitely there are some issues they need to solve.
Well, let's move on quickly again to what's been happening in the last days, the last week or two. What are the most significant developments from your point of view?
Well, I wouldn't name it as a development, but the most significant issue was that the system of electronic declaration and the law on that was amended with a few provisions that included actually members of civil society and NGOs as the person obliged to submit this declaration. And that was totally unexpected by civil society, by a part of the parliament.
Who initiated this? Where did this come from?
Well, actually, the draft law submitted to the parliament, it wasn't about the civil society. It was just to solve the problem that occurred with the military servants who are now at the battlefield, basically, and they were obliged to submit this electronic declaration, and they doesn't have even the internet connection proper level. So the goal of draft law was to solve this problem and to let that people not to declare while they don't have the access. But then the member of parliament named Tatiana Chernovil, she established a few amendments to that draft law, and actually she proposed these provisions, including NGOs to the
system. And how do you understand that? Tatiana Chernovil, we remember, was such a leading campaign against corruption in the Yanukovych period, suffered physically, etc., and is leading this. So what do you think the rationale was behind this?
And she used to be the investigative journalist, and these provisions would influence an investigative journalist as well. They would be required to submit these declarations. Because these provisions oblige to declare their assets, all the civil activists, members of NGOs, and other person who are receiving money from the grant project, from the technical support programs, and a lot of investigative journalists receiving money from that sources.
So why do you think she would have come out with this initiative?
I don't think that that was her personal initiative, because she is a member of the Narodny Front Party, which is the part of the ruling coalition. And the way the parliament was voting for that, the journalists have spotted a lot of not personal votings of the member of ruling coalition for that draft law. So I would say that that was the joint decision of the coalition.
And there was a meeting after this with the president, representative of civil society, who were expressing their concern. Apparently some kind of compromise was worked out in the sense that the president says, well, let's go with what we have now, but we'll return to this at a later stage. Is Transparency International and its allies content with this compromise, or do you remain concerned?
Well, the main argument of the president was that he can't use the veto right for that law because basically tomorrow there is a deadline for submitting this declaration. If he would use that right, the army servants would be obliged to declare their assets. So he proposed his vision that he would sign that law, and it was published yesterday. So now it's the part of the legislation.
Yeah, it's in force.
And then he would initiate the creating of the working group, which is supposed to develop the draft law on amending that most questionable provisions of this law.
I see it's been criticized even by the Deputy Minister of Justice yesterday, Sergei Petukhov, who said it's too vague, that legally it doesn't really hold water.
Absolutely. That doesn't match with the main idea of the electronic declaration system, because the goal of the system is to monitor the income, the assets of the people empowered by state authorities and people who are receiving money from the state funds. And the goal of this monitoring is to find whether these people are receiving unlawful wealth, unexplained assets, during comparing this declaration for every year. And including NGOs doesn't make any sense, because NGOs and civil activists cannot be charged for unlawful enrichment, because, well, that's not the part of the criminal code. So the main issue is just to show, just to oblige them to submit this declaration, just to show their assets, and that's it. So the coalition, the ruling parties, just giving to the society some kind of attraction, and they're using this argument, well, if you have no to hide, why are you so fighting against this provision? But it doesn't make sense.
Okay, and just before we end, a comment or two about the body responsible for setting up the e-declaration system has come under fire. In fact, key officials are asking for its members to resign. What is the issue here? Lack of know-how, lack of capacity, will, incompetence?
Well, actually, that was also a new body established, the National Agency on Preventing Corruption, which is supposed to deal with the e-declaration register, which is empowered to file administrative protocols against people who are violating that rules. And the issue of the last week is that this body couldn't provide the proper work of the register. So for the week, people couldn't even enter the system to submit the declaration. And the deadline is tomorrow. So a lot of people haven't even the chance to do that.
So what is going on? Have we been pushing too radically, expecting too much change and probing too deeply? Or is it, as we say, all connected to political will? Or is it connected to capacity and quality of personnel?
I would say that, first of all, it's up to political will, and also it's to capacity of personnel. Because this agency, they have almost a year to deal with these problems. They knew before that they would face these problems and that amount of people willing to and have to declare. And they did nothing to solve this problem. They did nothing to get prepared for that amount of work. And actually, the first wave of these declarations, they received on October 2016, and they didn't check any of that. They didn't do any work on providing society with information on that, for verifying information submitted by at least top officials.
Okay, Andriy, and finally, your own personal view. Are you optimistic about the way things in this sphere of fighting corruption will go over the next year, or are you pessimistic, or are you in some kind of ambiguous mood?
Well, if I would have to choose, I would say that I'm rather optimistic, or realistic optimistic, something like that, because not because of the actions of state authorities, but because of the mindset of society itself. It's changing. It's changing every day, and it's getting harder and harder for the members of parliament, for members of government, to justify their actions when they are not showing proper commitment to fight corruption.
Okay, thank you, Andriy. Well, thank you that we finish on a more optimistic note. Let me remind listeners, we've been listening to a discussion with Andriy Slusar, who is a representative of Transparency International working in Ukraine with others to combat corruption. Thank you very much, Andriy.
Thank you.
On International Theatre Day, a newcomer theatre group, Diki Theater, which means Wild Theatre, won the Pectoral Prize for Best Theatre in Kyiv. The Wild Theatre was founded only a year ago and is breaking new ground in Ukraine, such as staging Michel-Marc Bouchard's Tom at the Farm. It is proving that theatre can be interesting to audiences, profitable to actors, and can exist without government subsidies or a permanent address. Wild Theatre is a protest against the theatre of banal truths and aims to be sharp and often is provocative. And with winning Kyiv's Pectoral Prize, it definitely seems to have brought a breath of fresh air into Ukraine's theatre space. Music. There's a new band in Dnipro, a major industrial city in central Ukraine. They call themselves Yunak, which means a youth. Here's their new single, Krila, Wings, which premiered on Hromadske Radio's music show Pora Roku, hosted by Andriy Kulikov. Enjoy.
Ночі поставлять сто.
And looking forward, next week we will be following the main stories in Ukraine again. Tune in for a new episode. We'd love to hear from you, of course. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org, all lowercase, ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.